This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Here are Spartan Dogs Timbo Gracchus, Todd Duckett, and Andre Hudson with another former Spartan running back, Little John Flowers.
Spartan Dog Podcast is brought to you by Simple Tee Printing. We make shirts, we give back. Making printing shirts simple. Check them out today at simple-tee.org. Conquest Health and Fitness. Reshape, rebuild, and renew your life. Go check them out at their website, conquesthealthandfitness.com. And Evergreen Car Wash and Detail. Ride like a champion today. Give them a call at 517-574-1598. They'll come to your house, your work, your place of business, worship, wherever. They'll pick your car up, and they'll have you riding right. We're joined today by a guest who might be considered, well, he is considered to me, the second half or one part of the greatest 1-2 combo in Kalamazoo Lloyd Norwich football history. Former Michigan State football player, professional football player, Little John Flowers.
Little John, welcome.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Now, I got a special, unique relationship with Little John. We grew up together. We played against each other all the way from like 8, 9, 10 years old. I think he played on the line back then.
Yeah.
And then I'll never forget, you know, life's kind of worked. And then I was in 8th grade getting ready to go to high school. And this guy runs for like 10,000 yards. He runs for like 10,000 yards freshman year and is killing it. And, you know, that's the first time I really was like, started to meet him a little bit. And, you know, at that time, I was getting ready to go to high school. And, shoot, I played running back, too. And it was really like, what are we going to do? And I got hurt. I tell you what, I got hurt my going into my 9th grade year. And I didn't play any sports that year. But I was training the whole time. And Little was always there every time. I mean, getting me right, big baby, going to need you next year. I mean, he just kept in my ear and kept motivating. And that was something, that's where our relationship began as a 9th grader. And throughout our high school years and throughout our college years, that kind of, it kept going, it kept on. And even now in our adult lives. Little, let's share a little bit about your experience at Michigan State. How'd you happen to come here? And let's talk about MSU a little bit.
Michigan State was, you know, it was probably my only choice that I wanted. That's the school that I wanted to go to. You know, once I got to visit here with Nick Saban and we were at the Breslin Center watching the basketball team and Magic Johnson came down and met me and my family, it was a wrap my junior year. We was there. Magic showed up. You know, it was no way I was turning the school down. My dad was a big, huge Magic Johnson fan, so we was here. So, you know, getting here to Michigan State, you know, that was probably the easy part. You know, I just knew I was coming here. You know, my experience at Michigan State was awesome. I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, being here at Michigan State and, you know, getting the chance to be in the same backfield with my best friend, you know, TJ, you know, it was a dream come true, you know, to be there through that whole experience, our whole, you know, 4 years or his 3 years and my 4 years to be together the whole time coming from Lloyd Norwich. You know, who you couldn't ask for anything better to be the backup to your best friend, and you know, we going through this struggle together, you know, and you know, to see the success that he had and see the success that I had here, you know, it was awesome. Some of the greatest experiences, greatest times of my life was right here at Michigan State.
Now, I remember, you know, around that time when you guys were coming in, everybody who was a Michigan State fan knew the name Little John Flowers coming to Michigan State. Did you struggle with the hype that came along with being a big time recruit when you got to college and making that transition from high school to Michigan State?
Yeah, I definitely. I thought I did. It was a big change for me being here. You know, didn't have my parents and was, you know, just freshman struggles of trying to, you know, be turn into a little man coming up here. You know, I was just like all of the other little knuckleheads that came here and, you know, thought he was the next great thing, you know. But, you know, having a coach like Nick Saban and Bobby Williams, you know, they straighten you out real quick, you know. And they put me in my place my freshman year. And then, you know, once I felt like once TJ got here and we got going, I think everything else planned out and it went as smooth as possible. You know, once it just felt like it was some home cooking here once he got here, and it just rolled after that.
What we talk a lot about coaches too. Nick Saban, one of the greatest coaches in my opinion ever to coach. Still, talk about the impact, because you had him longer than I had him.
Right.
Talk about him a little bit and his impact in the game and in your life.
Well, it's, you know, Coach Saban, I agree with you. He will go down as one of the greatest college coaches ever. To me, he will go down as that. But he was, you didn't know it right then at that time, but now every day, you know, that I go through the processes that I'm going through in my life, you can see him all over it because of, you know, he was all about processes, you know, and doing the process. He didn't care what the score was. We gonna do our jobs and do the processes at all times and be relentless at it, you know, and you would be successful. If you continue to do the processes, you continue to work hard, and you continue to be relentless at that, you'll be successful at anything you do. And he was a big stickler on that, of just trying to be, you know, he wanted you to try to be perfect. And you either was perfect or he got you to be perfect. So I'll just say it like that, you know. But that his coaching style, you know, it sits with me to this day. That the job that I'm doing now is just making sure we're doing the processes every day. And if we do that, we'll be successful.
Yeah, that's the thing about great coaches, man. I relate to you in a lot of ways because I feel Coach Izzo was kind of that same. You know, it came from that same breed. And great coaches, they just leave an effect on you, man, in your whole life. It's not just that during that playing career, but it's things that you can take with you, you know what I mean, as you learn to grow and develop and go to that next step in life. And I think, you know, from there, I didn't even know you guys played together in high school, and the fact that you guys came up here and played the same position, that's an amazing story in itself, man. And I think it's awesome that you guys were able to, you know, continue to grow through high school and through college. And I just wondered, I know a lot about TJ, you know, how he kind of, his career took off after college. And I wanted to just kind of talk to you about how you, after you made that split, you know, you lost a lot of ties here at Michigan State, like we all did. We all kind of had to go on our own journey and take that next step, you know, leaving your best friend. Leaving Michigan State, how are you able to kind of move into that next stage of life, and what were some of those things that helped you get to that next stage?
With me, it was, you know, I was leaving Michigan State, you know, thinking I was, you know, I didn't think I would get drafted, or, you know, I was going to get a shot or get a chance to play in the NFL. So I was so hungry, as in saying, to wanting to make it to the NFL and wanting to do my best to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of easy transition because I moved down to Atlanta and started working out and, you know, getting my body and getting my mind ready for that next level, you know. And it was just, that's all my mind was consumed of, was, you know, trying to get on the NFL team, Mm-hmm. And then when I finally got that call from the Jets to go up there, it was, you know, move to New York and let's try to make this team. And that's what happened for the next 5 years of my life, was trying to make a team, trying to make the New York Jets, or, you know, trying to make the Giants, NFL Europe, you know, all of these. And then, you know, arena football. It was all about, you know, just doing the processes again. You know, I was just doing the processes of getting my body right and getting my mind right to get ready to go play football year in and year out,
right.
You know. And so the transition to going that was pretty easy, I think, because of, you know, coaches like Nick Saban in my life and some of the coaches I had in high school, you know. And, you know, looking at TJ's success, that was, that drove me too, because I wanted to be successful too. I kind of looked up to what he was doing, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, so that drove me too. So, you know, that transition to that part of the NFL, it was, you know, it was kind of easy. But once you get into the NFL and trying to stay in the NFL, that's the hard part. You know, yeah. Getting there was easy, if you want to say, but staying there was the hard part, mm-hmm. you know, and,
yeah, I agree. I mean, most of your work was done before you got there. I mean, your resume was laid out here at the university, so they, in a way, they knew what you can do. From there, it was just keeping your body ready or preparing mm-hmm. yourself to be ready for that season, you know. So I totally agree and understand where you're coming from there.
You're listening to Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio, and our guest is Lil Jon Flowers. So after that every year making the team, every year doing that, when was the point that you realized you were done doing that? What was that moment that you said, this is my last training camp, this is my last off season of working out? What was that point, and what was it like?
I think when I knew it was over was probably when the New York Giants training camp. It was the last training camp that I was doing, and I remember driving up there, and I had to lose some weight to make weight. And then I had to run that test, and that test was serious that day. And it took everything out of my psyche to make that test. I'm talking about it was all will to just make this test. And when I finished that test, I was like, you know what? This is probably it for me up here. I done gave it everything I got,
right.
Because I know that to pass that test that day, I had gave everything, every ounce of me to pass that test that day. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know what? This is probably it for me, you know? Yeah. And then, you know, it was, you know, when I finally got cut from the Giants and that drive, because I always drove to training camps, and it was, you know, a 10-hour drive back home from up there. And it was kind of like bittersweet. You know, it was like, you know, I know this is the last time I'm ever going to play in the NFL or get a chance to play in the NFL. But then it was like, you know, all right, let's move on to something else. It's about to be something new. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to defend my pride or defend my manhood anymore. You know, I don't have to do that again in my life. So that was huge, just knowing that, you know, now I can get ready. It was, you know, I got to go back to school to get my degree and stuff like that, you know, but, you know, the football aspect of it was, and that part, the NFL part was over and professional, but, you know, I did end up playing 2 more years of, you know, arena football, but it was nothing like, you know, getting yourself ready for an NFL training camp.
That's interesting you say that, because I think all of us have had that feeling of that kind of that bittersweet feeling when you know it's over, but it's kind of a relief, like, because I know I can think back to my senior year here at State, you know, when it was over, I was like, man, it's, you know, it kind of hit me like it's over with. But it was also a bittersweet feeling like, all right, well, it's time to step to that next level now, to something else, and start getting paid. And even when I stopped playing professionally, it was, I mean, that same exact feeling, man. And that's something I don't think we've even really touched on. But I think it's something that's pretty common in all levels of athletics. You know, I mean, even from high school, when you finish your senior year, maybe some of those guys don't even play again, you know, and it's kind of bittersweet where they're like, man, this is my last game, but they're also taking that next step.
It's almost like a relationship that you don't hate the person,
right?
But it's time to move on. Man, you good, whatever, but
it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's kind of it, is what it's like, huh?
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a Spartan Dogs podcast conversation between Todd Duckett, Andre Hudson, Tim Bogracus, and Little Jon Flowers.
You made the decision to come back to school, because I've talked to people that have come back to school, whether they were athletes or not, and they say, you know, the longer you're away from it, the harder it is to get back into going to classes and taking school, you know, 100% seriously. How hard was that transition to being back into classes, into, you know, I don't know if you did tutoring, or if you did, I mean, when you're, you know, you're older than all the other students,
right?
You know, you've been a professional athlete,
right?
How hard was that?
It wasn't hard at all for me. I mean, if once you throw your pride away of you've been 20, because I was like 28, 27. you throw that away, and you throw your pride of I was riding a bike to class because I ain't want to get no parking tickets. you throw all that away there. You know, it was easy. I mean, school became so easy to me because now all I'm doing is going to class.
Yeah.
I ain't got to worry about getting up at 6 o'clock and going to see Ken Manning and getting getting killed in the weight room or running or doing this. All I'm doing is going to class,
right.
You know, sitting in front of class for a little while and you're done,
yeah.
You know. So it was something that, you know, I put everything into it with me. With me, I moved back on campus. I was staying at Spartan Village for a full year.
Mm.
Like I said, I rode a bike to class. I don't think I didn't miss one class the whole 34 credits that I needed to get my degree, you know. And it was pretty, you know, one, like I said, once you, you know, get your pride away from you being older than everybody in class, you know, and you riding that bike again, going to class or catching a bus, going back to class,
yeah.
You know, you get over that stuff. It was pretty easy for me.
Now, once you came back, you completed your degree.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and how you've kind of gotten from that point to where you are today, because I think that's a great story for people to hear.
Well, with me, it was, you know, I came back to Michigan State, and I needed a whole summer and I needed two semesters, 34 credits to get my degree. I got my degree in communications, and I was looking for a job, and you know, I it was like two choices: Walmart or Denver Mattresses, assistant manager positions. And you know, I went to Walmart and, you know, had a great interview. And what's funny was the people that interviewed me, and they was asking me like what type of job I've had before, and I was like, man, all I did was play football. So they was like, basically answer all these questions. You know, what's your, you know, do you have any experiences, or give us an example? And, you know, it was all like with football things, or what we did in the huddle, or,
yeah.
You know, me being a captain, just showing them that I was a leader and stuff. And, you know, so that's what my interview was. And, you know, at the end of it, I was like, you know, I've got to go do an interview at Denver Mattresses, and they was offering like $40,000 or something, and he was like, well, I'll give you 42, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll go to Walmart. So I stayed there and went to Walmart, and you know, I got there, and you know, I've only retail that I did, I think before then, was when I was 13. I think Coach Pennington gave me a job at Jules Osco, being the cart pusher, the bottle counter, and the bagger. You know? And we had to wear a suit and tie. I mean, we had to wear a shirt and tie out there in that hot sun pushing those carts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only retail experience I had. So getting there and having to learn the Walmart way, you know, and it took me I think it was 6 months I was at the store that I was at. And then they asked me if I wanted to go and help open up a new store up in Saline, Michigan. So, mm-hmm. You know, going down to Saline, that's next to Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only person down there with green and white on. You know, I'm representing every day. But
every day,
Michigan State. But, you know, help open up a store there. And then they moved me to, after we got that store open, they moved me to Howell. I was in Howell for about 7 months. So within a year and about 8 months, I interviewed for, you know, a shift manager, co-manager position, and I got the job, you know. So I got promoted within about a year and a half of, you know, starting with the company as assistant manager, and now I'm a shift manager down in Battle Creek, Michigan. And I was there for about a year. And then I transferred up here to the Lanson stores, and I've been at the Lanson store for the past 2 years as the shift manager here, working overnights. I've been overnights, done it all. I've never thought that, you know, I would love what I'm doing, you know, and that's what I do. Like, I don't see myself when I go to work, it's not a job. I love what I'm doing. I never thought I would love retail, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm seriously a person that loves his job, you know. It's a career to me, you know, and it's, you know, all kind of ways to grow in the company, a great company. You know, it's meant the world to me, and you know, I couldn't have got it without my degree. You know, I if I didn't have my degree, you know, I'd probably been a cart pusher again, you know, to start off with. Instead, you know, now I'm, you know, actually running the whole store. So, you know, it's a cool job. I love it to death, you know, and that's what I've been doing the past 5 years now, is working for Walmart. And
I want you to I hate you tell that story about the books and the boss. Could you share that? Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I do that a lot when I'm speaking to people, and when I speak to kids, and I speak to college kids, any of them. It's sometimes you got to give them an example so they can see where it come from when I'm telling you that, you know, those books go a long way. So I tell people, you know, all right, you know, let me get a football up here and let me get a stack of books. And I want your best athletes to come up here, you know. And that person on that stand on that football, he can be up there. He'd be up there shaking like a mug, but he'd be up there, you know, and eventually he'll fall off. But that person that's standing on those books, they standing strong. They ain't going nowhere. You know, they going to be there forever. That's because, you know, it's once you get that degree and you got that education, it's not going anywhere. But that football or that basketball, you can be up there. You can stay up there for a little while, but eventually you're going to fall off, and you're going to have something to fall back on. And, you know, that it's the perfect example. You know, I've done it too, where, you know, you see kids up there trying to stay on that football, and it's shaking and even. Yeah, it ain't going to last too long trying to balance up on there. But you get that stack of books, you know, you can last forever with that stack of books, man, you know, and that's what has happened to me, period. That's, I mean, it's something
that's,
that
that's why, hey, I like that one. This is Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio. You're listening to Lil Jon Flowers. Yeah, I hear him when he said that the first time a few years ago. He said that, yeah. I mean, and that it resonated so much to me. I think that's something that people really don't think about.
Right.
They don't think about as simple of a demonstration that is, how real of a demonstration that is, some way or another. And sometimes you'll say, you can stand there having the perfect balance, but eventually the ball's going to run out of air. Yeah. I mean, that really got me. So to now with your new profession, what you're doing with Walmart, every day when you wake up and you go to work, do you approach it the same way you approach the game? I mean, do you get fired? You say you love it. Right. And I know, and like all of us, I think, to be able to have that passion that we had for the game, that passion overflows into whatever it is we're kind of doing now.
Right.
So do you like turn your music up and you get all fired up to go into work?
I do. Only thing, I really do. I listen to my music up real loud if I go into work, just because that's just what we did before. Yeah. We, you know, went played a game or before practice, we turned our music up. But you will never get that. You know, the only part of the sports or the football that I miss is that right before the game, the national anthem, that feeling that you have, that right before you about to get ready and go out there. Yeah. I don't care what you do, what Walmart can do, or what's about to go on that day. You'll never get that feeling back. But you know, it's, you know, you still try to approach every day, you know, you try to have the same things that, you know, like I said, like what Nick Saban was preaching all the time, you know, I want to go out in here and make sure we're doing the processes. We want to make sure we stand on top of the processes, getting things done and people working hard, and we'll be successful. So, you know, it's still all of that stuff has made me and turned me into, I think, one of the a good manager at Walmart.
Well, I can say for every single team that I played on with you, Little John was the captain of every single one. Everyone, from the time we were young to the time we were at Michigan State, he was the captain every time.
Been doing it since day one.
Yeah, since day one. And
there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and that's where I was. The second part was going into the game or going to work like a game. I mean, being the captain, Little showed so much leadership, not just in what he said, but in his words. Or not just in what he did, but in his words. And he would have us so fired up before the game to go. I mean, just to do everything we had for that moment.
Right.
Are you able to share that same energy with the work with your coworkers. I mean, that's powerful to have,
right.
You know, 85 grown adult kids, right. You know, and then to be have their hearts, their attentions, and right. their minds focused. Is that something that you can utilize now?
Yeah, only thing I can't use some of the words that we used to use to get you guys fired up. But it's a way. It is a way that I use to talk to the because. You know, when you're dealing with a whole, like, 300 people in the store, you know, it's a lot of personalities. But it's just like a locker room, too. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of different personalities, and you got to kind of coddle them and get them to, you know, believe in what you're talking about. And, you know, from being in sports and, you know, being the captain of the team and dealing with some of the people that we've dealt with, the Charlie Max, Big Charles Levies, you know, some of the people that we've dealt with, and you have to be able to talk to them and get them to get things done for you. And then, you know, the same thing at Walmart, you know, with some of the people that work there, you know, I have to be able to talk to them in a certain way to help them and get them motivated for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's a job, you know, and you have to motivate people to get things done. And I think, you know, the way that I go about my business, you know, I think everyone feels like it's fair. Everyone feels like I'm, you know, I listen to them. Everyone feels like I'm going to try to take care of them whenever I can. And they'll break their back for me, you know, and I'm not asking them to do it. They want to do it because, you know, they feel like I'm a fair and I'm a person just like them, so that's how I
genuine.
Go about it.
Yeah.
So what we like to do at the end of our podcast is have our guests leave our listeners with just a little bit of wisdom. It can be anything, but, you know, from sports, from business, but just something that you think you could share that'll be impactful that you've used in the past or you've learned during your journey. So it's all yours.
What I would tell everybody is to, you know, get into a routine, you know, and that routine needs to consist of things that's going to help you get better every day. You know, every day you need to be working to get better. You never stay the same. There's never a day where you stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. And if you go about it that way of coming up with a routine where you can get better every day at your business or playing football, basketball, baseball, you doing something every day to get better. Come up with a routine that way and keep getting better every day. Life is like a never-ending race to me. It's, you know, you never crossing the finish line. You just keep on running because you keep on getting, you're trying to continue to get better and better every day. So just keep doing that. Keep going. Don't ever let nobody tell you can't do it and you'll be successful in life, period.
Well, I'm going to tell y'all, this was very special for me. To be able to do this, especially with Lil John here, knowing him for so many years. I mean, just so many things just ring out and to close up. But, I mean, you're the captain of our high school team that had 22 people on it.
Right.
You were the captain of the Michigan State team that had 85 people on it.
Right.
Now you're the captain with 300 people watching,
right.
300 people listening. And the fact that these are skills that you had when – we were kids. I mean, looking at football being possibly the it, but that was all things preparing for whatever is next. I mean, next thing is you'll be the captain of 300,000 people.
Right.
To go from Lori Norris, Kalamazoo to, I mean, this is after our career.
Right.
I mean, this is after.
Right.
And we're here having a conversation on the growth and still the success. I mean, this is awesome, man. Appreciate you. This is fantastic.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you very much for coming. I think this is exactly the kind of stuff we love talking
this
about.
This is beautiful.
So,
this is great, man.
Great story, man.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for listening.
Another Spartan Dog podcast. Like us on Facebook, Spartan Dogs Podcast. Go to iTunes, search Spartan Podcast, all one word. You can take us on the road with you. We need to thank John Whiting and Russ White in the booth.
Thank you,
that
fellas.
Make us sound
appreciate
so good.
Ya.
Yeah.
Spartan Dog Podcast, we're out.
Go green.
Go white.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was former Spartan running back Little John Flowers talking with Spartan Dogs podcast hosts Timbo Gracchus, Todd Duckett, and Andre Hudson. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, the dogs are back with Channel 10's Jason Colthorpe.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
The best reason to become a certified Spartan by joining the MSU Alumni Association is the network of 500,000 Spartans that are out there that we can connect you with.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
Victory for MSU!
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
Here are Spartan dogs Andre Hudson, Tim Bogracus, and Todd Duckett with Channel 10 anchorman Jason Colthorpe.
Spartan Dog Podcast is brought to you by Simple Tee Printing. We make shirts, we give back. Making printing shirts simple. Check them out today at simple-tee.org. Conquest Health and Fitness. Reshape, rebuild, and renew your life. Go check them out at their website, conquesthealthandfitness.com. An Evergreen Car Wash and Detail. Ride like a champion today. Give them a call at 517-574-1598. They'll come to your house, your work, your place of business, worship, wherever. They'll pick your car up and they'll have you riding right. We're joined today by one of the prettiest faces in Lansing, according to a lot of women between the age of 60 and 70. Jason Colthorpe, ladies and gentlemen.
Jason Colthorpe, yeah. What's up?
What's up, buddy?
You have no idea how true that is.
It's very true.
That is very true. You go to Jackson and ask women over 70, oh, man.
You're big. You.
Might
that's
might your
might
demo
well
be Tom
right
Cruise, man.
Now, for the people that don't know, give us a little bit of an idea of your path to where you are today in terms of your TV career.
How I got here, it's a strange journey, to be sure, because not a lot of people get to where I get the way I got. And I got done with college and didn't do a lot of internships. I did more for MSU hockey when I was in school, but most people do more internships. I didn't have a lot, and I didn't have much of a tape together. And I went to work for the Lansing Lugnuts as the stadium MC. I got that job because, you know, I was mouthy. I can be funny. I can get up in front of people. And that went well, and I was trying to break in at Channel 10, and the guy that was there, who's still there, I kept saying, he goes, that's not real experience. So I just kept trying and worked on Tim Stout and finally got a job in sports, which is what I wanted to do. And once I got into sports, I thought that's where I needed to be, because my whole dream was always to be on SportsCenter and be an anchor on SportsCenter. And then somewhere along the line, an opportunity in news came along, and I wasn't sure I even wanted to do that because I didn't watch the news. I watched sports. That's all I did. And somehow they talked me into it, and it was the best thing I ever did, and I ended up going to do the morning news, and I just kept ascending at Channel 10, and now I'm the 5, 6, and 11 anchor there.
Mm. That's beautiful. Hey, do you get to read the news first? I mean, do you read it as it comes off the prompter?
No, that's why I'm like headed into work around 3 o'clock every day. I usually get there for a meeting, and we have producers who write the show and stack the show, and kind of have decisions, and I'll read it ahead of time, you know, a couple hours ahead of time, and I'm one of those people who likes to write, and I'll rewrite a lot of things and add in my own things to make it sound like I would normally talk and things like that. So yeah, we read it ahead of time.
Good. I always wondered that. That was just my own personal question.
Earlier this year, you were a part of a viral video that hit the internet pretty hard in terms of a pause in the middle of your broadcast. How did it feel to be famous for just stopping?
Our business, that's what we would call a factual error on your part, Mr. Bogracus, because it was actually last year.
Okay, all right. You can tell how much I watch the news.
It was election night in November of last year, and we had this exit polling that we were going to talk about, but we weren't allowed to talk about it until 8 o'clock. Well, nobody told me about that. And about 7:55, I turned to our analyst and I started talking about it. And in my ear gets a producer, and he says, he yells, and I've never had anybody yell this, and he says, "Stop, stop talking about that. We can't talk about that." And I heard, "Stop talking." And I went, and I kind of paused, and, well, Deadspin grabbed it. I swear to God, it was, actually, there were two pauses. It was really bad. And it was about 10 minutes later, after it was over, somebody tweeted at me that Deadspin already had it up on their website, and it was going viral. And that was a Tuesday. On Friday, Jay Leno ran it in a little bit in his monologue called Great Moments in Broadcasting. And I thought, oh, my God. But I told somebody the other day about it. I said, you know, it doesn't bother me. I laughed about it, and you have to laugh, because if I can sit back and, you know, be proud of the things I've done, like, you know, like being on with Regis and Kelly, being on with Kelly Ripa, if I'm going to be proud of that, why can't I sit back and laugh about, you know, a blooper that went viral? It's kind of funny.
Absolutely.
What was it like working on Regis and Kelly?
It was, you know, it's like, you guys probably know, because being in the pros or going to the next level of, you know, a lot of things, I've only been at one level in my career, and that's Channel 10, and it's Lansing. And all of a sudden, it was like going from single-A baseball, not to downgrade Channel 10, but to the major leagues in one day.
You better watch who's paying the bills.
Yeah, it was just like all these people, one guy doing my mic, and he's putting it on, and this producer's coming to tell me this, and this producer there, and there's just so many people handling you, and all of a sudden, the star walks around the corner, and she says, "Hey, are you ready to do this?" I'm like, "Yeah, what's up? You look great. What's going on?" And it's just like 2 minutes, and, you know, you meet her 2 minutes before the show. It's just like a machine, and it's running so smoothly. You go out there and everything. There's no glitches. There's no anything. They're ready for anything. And it was just, I was just amazed at how they could roll, because that whole show is impromptu. There's nothing scripted. And I remember that one part where she said to me, "Do your model walk," because I ran the side. The video I brought with me that talked about how I got where I was for that show, I incorporated this part where I won a baby beauty contest, like when I was five or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Then my mom got me in.
Of course your mom did.
Okay, yeah, that's what I needed to hear, Drake. Wow. So she goes, "Do your model walk," and I get up and I do this thing, and they get music going, they get the lights going, the crowd's going. I'm like, how are they ready for this? You know, we were going to do this. This wasn't practice, so it was pretty impressive.
You're listening to Spartan Dogs Podcast with our guest, Jason Colthrop.
How do you think like social media and the different outlets that are out there now have changed reporting over the last 5-10 years? Because you were kind of in it prior to all of that, and you've seen it kind of boom.
Well, I'll give you a good example. Tim Stout the other day said, or a while back, he said, "Now why would I actually put something on Twitter before I break it on the news?" And I said, "Tim, you can't hold anything anymore. You have to." That's almost how you break stories now, is on Twitter or on Facebook or on, you know, online. WILX.com, we'll go there and post a story. If something happens at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we don't wait till 5 o'clock now to tell people about it.
Huh.
We put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, we put it on our webpage, and sometimes if it's big enough, we'll send out a text alert to people that have signed up for that. So, I mean, people, this world, you guys know, I mean, people that have a smartphone want their information now. They need it now. And as the day goes on, so it's also changed how we do newscasts. So we don't just do a newscast at 5 o'clock and talk to people like they're hearing it for the first time. We almost have to assume they've heard it, and now we're taking it to the next step. You know what the, you know what the story is. There's been a strike at such and such place. What happens next? What's next for this event or this this coverage that we have? So it's changed a lot of things.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question. Does that, you know, with the new age of reporting news and getting this stuff out there, has that affected how you guys prepared, you know, to do these newscasts? And I guess the second part of that would be, do you see an effect in numbers, you know, over the years as far as viewership from people actually watching the news and people actually just looking at the news on their phone now? I mean, is there a big difference as far as what, you know, I know you haven't been doing it for so long, but I'm sure you have a little bit of history and a sense of viewerships from 10, 20 years ago to what you guys are getting now.
Yeah, and it's interesting how people will talk to us about that study, what this does to your viewer numbers, and a lot of people expected them to drop way down because people would just go online and check the news whenever they wanted to, because a lot of people post their newscasts making, so they don't have to tune in at 5, 6, and 11, but for the most part, the numbers have actually stayed pretty steady with people that still tune in at 5, 6, and 11,
mm-hmm.
and in the mornings, And what the actual shift that we've seen are more people are getting up earlier and fewer people are staying up late. So the numbers at 11 o'clock drop, while the numbers like in the morning, early in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, those have gone way up. But the other thing it's affected is as we do the news, like I'll tweet from the set and I'll Facebook from the newsroom and things like that. We'll put links to what we're doing and we try and teases used to be like we'd tape a tease and it would run in Dr. Oz a half hour before. Now they still do, but we also try and tease stories on Twitter and on Facebook and get the word out that way and say, hey, here's what's coming up if you want to tune in. It's also on WILX.com and things like that. But you have to be interacting with the people and just I try and just my whole goal is to keep it real and I want to just take people behind the scenes and say, here's what we do, you know, and this is when we're on in a commercial, here's what Lauren and I are doing. We're goofing around or I'm making a joke with Andy or something like that.
Right.
Oh, by the way, we have this story coming up later.
First time I ever saw a Twitter handle underneath the name of, you know, when they're introducing you or whatever on the news, you saw the at in your Twitter handle. And that completely blew my mind when I saw that. I mean, before, I didn't even really know a whole lot about Twitter. I'm still learning what Twitter, more about it. But to see the mass media, to see how big it was, to now the news stations are giving out their Twitter handle, that's when I really knew it was a new day and age for everything.
You know, I kind of took a chance on that. I did that a long time ago. It wasn't a producer who made that decision, and it was our station. Huh. I've kind of push the envelope social media wise with our station anyway. I think I started our station's first Facebook page. We have a big main one now, but originally when I was doing News 10 at 11, I started a News 10 at 11 page, and when I had a Twitter page going, I thought, you know what, instead of my email address, I'm going to put my Twitter handle. I'm just going to try it and see what happens and see if it grows that or whatever, people catch on. And so I did that for a while, and it just kind of caught on. As a station, everybody thought that was a good idea, so we kind of adopted that. And then more people got Facebook pages, but then eventually corporate said, let's just have one Facebook page, and that's kind of the problem with that. Once corporations get involved, it makes it uncool. Nobody really, you know. You can kind of see Facebook dying slowly because of corporations.
Hey, I'm a big Facebook user, man. I'm still looking at my Twitter account. So.
Hey, do you have a MySpace page, Dre?
Actually, I never got it before it went bad. So.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between Channel 10 News anchorman Jason Colthorpe and Spartan Dogs podcast hosts Tim Bogracus, Todd Duckett, and Andre Hudson.
Do you think that athletes are almost being overreported now? So there's such a need for wanting to know what people are doing on a day-to-day basis that they're searching and reaching to try to cover everything an athlete's doing?
Absolutely. And that's almost a good question for you guys, because I was doing this social media kind of workshop for Susie Merchant's Elite Camp earlier this summer, and she basically wanted me to kind of snoop and see what these girls do online and then kind of give them a little lecture about it. And they were just doing all sorts of things, and I said, you guys have to remember, what's one of the things you see when you watch SportsCenter now? What do you see almost in every show? They run tweets of professional athletes. There'll be some story about something, and they'll grab an athlete from a completely different sport and show what they're thinking about it, and you're like, who cares what he thinks? But
right.
It's, you know, what do you guys think about that? Do you really want to know every time LeBron scores 30 what Donovan McNabb thinks about it?
Right.
No, I don't.
And I think it's just out of control all the way around, from kids commenting, and I mean the disrespect on, I mean, being able to say just so much. I think there's a lot of we don't have that personal relationship, which in turn I don't believe there's still the contact, the connection. There's a lack of respect all the way around, I think, because you can say anything and there's no consequences for what you say, your actions, some of the pictures. That's how I personally believe that it kind of leaks into people not knowing how to really interact with each other because of the computer screen or the phone barrier that's put out there, which creates more of a distance between an athlete or an entertainer or someone who's put up on that pedestal. It creates more of a distance between the two. So I think it's, I mean, that's my take on it.
And with kids too. Yeah. I've been having that battle, even just raising my daughters. And I'll say, you know, I'm not raising you to be this kid that puts her face in her phone all day and has no people skills. Right. Yeah. You got to be able to interact with people. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say, when it comes to Twitter, I saw an interesting thing recently on, it was just this article about kind of an industry thing that said 10 things that great tweeters do and this and that. Well, in one of them was how there's a kind of a movement to be more positive on Twitter and how more people are reacting and gravitating toward people who can do things positively on Twitter and say good things about other things that are going on and spin it positive. Because, I mean, how many times do you go through your feed and you'll see just like 20 sarcastic things in a row? And I'm not judging, because I'm guilty of that. I love to make a joke and be sarcastic on Twitter, but sure. I also see the benefit of trying to be positive and trying to, you know, say something good about something else going on out there.
You're listening to Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio with our guest, Jason Cothrop. I feel the same way, man. It's you read up and down your news feed, and there is a little bit of difference here and there. It's just interesting hearing that coming from a person who shares the news with the world,
yeah.
saying yeah. what is on other things and how you feel about it.
I think there's a especially from a collegiate, I mean, I look at it athletically wise, I'm not sure if the NCAA did a good enough job of getting out in front of the social media boom that was going to happen. And now they're almost trying to jump on a bus that's going 60 and trying to educate from behind. So I mean, it's an idea of figuring out who you are in that space, but also we got to, you know, teach the younger generation what they need to be trying to accomplish there.
And that's the thing too. It's trying to figure out who you are in that space. And you think something doesn't mean you hit send or you hit post the minute you think. It's a lot of growth in there.
That's across the board. That's probably the most powerful word in the English language right now. Send. Because it can get you in a lot of trouble yeah. very quickly.
Truth. Very quickly. Truth.
Hey, Jason, we generally have a lot of athletes on here. We kind of talk about their journey from, you know, when they were coming up and what they're doing now and how they're kind of getting by now. And a lot of the thing that's kind of common is just their passion and hard work for what they do. Just speaking a little bit on you, I mean, you're definitely one of the, you know, most decorated analysts around here, or anchors around here in the Lansing area. You're a huge asset to Channel 10. And I got to assume that you have a lot of similar traits to some of these other athletes have on this table when it comes to passion and dedication and hard work. And I just wanted to have you talk a little bit about how you prepare each day. How do you go about each day? I mean, I see you at least once a month doing some charity event. I'm assuming you're probably doing it once a week. I just only make a quarter of them, you know. And it takes a lot, you know, for anybody to go out there and do some of the things you do. And I just want you to give a little give a little insight into how you go about your day. How do you manage to do the things that you do on a daily basis?
Well, first of all, thanks for saying that, number one. And then, you know, just a couple things that I picked up from people that have been mentors to me over the years. And the first thing is just my grandfather always taught me to, you got to work hard at what you, this is the time in your life where you work your ass off and you get what you get, where you're going, get what you want.
Right.
And I, you know, one of my mentors, you guys probably know, Ben Holden, who was the weekend sports guy here, who mm-hmm. covered you guys when you were at Michigan State. He always would say, when good things come, you know, don't, and I've heard Coach Izzo say the same thing, don't get fat and sassy and start listening to the people say how great you are. You know, tune it out, just make you want to work harder. And I would just, you know, when ratings come in and ratings are good for us, you know, great. Celebrate it for maybe a night, and then just now it just makes you want to work even harder. Find some way to have be motivated. And right. when it comes to the community, when I first started, I knew that I was going from sports to news, and I thought, this is where I'm from, so it was easy anyway. I was born in Lansing, even though I was raised in Florida. I spent summers here, so I knew a lot of people, and I knew a lot of organizations, and it was like, I'm going to get out there and just see a lot of people, because a lot of people laugh at this notion, but there's another thing my grandpa taught me. Word of mouth advertising can be very powerful. If you talk to enough people, they tell 10 people, and that they tell 10 people. Before you know it, everybody goes, hey, you know, I'm going to give this guy a shot and see what he's about on the news. And when I started in the morning, I hosted every single thing I could. And I still try to. Now with a family, it's a little bit tougher, but I like to try and get out there and just do as many things as I can, because it just gives them a chance to see what you're like off camera and gives you a chance to meet people out in the community. And you guys do a lot of it too. So, I mean, you know what it's all about.
You know, at the end of all of our podcasts with our guests, we kind of like that. We like to, you know, kind of open it up for them to leave the viewers or listeners with a little bit of wisdom that they've learned along the way. And just so we can almost steal it for ourselves and just keep continuing to grow. So we're going to step out of the way and give you open air to you know, any bit of advice you'd like to give anybody that's listening.
Don't be afraid to work hard now. And, you know, and don't be afraid to take chances. And I think I've said this to a lot of kids. When you dream, dream big, and that's kind of a cliche, but don't be afraid to make mistakes. If you're going to make them at 100 miles an hour. Right. And you know what? When you're young and you're in business and you're worried about some money here and there, you know what? You can go broke five times over and still be a millionaire. Don't be afraid to take a risk, take a chance, especially when you're young. Get out there and go for it, because it's only going to make you stronger for the rest of your life down the line. And, you know, and that goes for other things. Like, I mean, fall in love with as many things as you can, as many times as you can. I mean, obviously, once you get married, you probably don't want to keep doing that, but all of a sudden you'll find yourself being a New York politician. Anywho, when you're young, you can really take chances and go for it, and just don't be afraid of change. I run across so many people so often that, you know, hey, we're going to do things this way. Well, I don't know if that's going to work. I don't think we should try that. Let's not, you know, embrace it. Let's change things up. I mean, especially in our business, you know, people don't want to see the same thing every single day. And in a lot of businesses, a little change can be great. A little change can reinvigorate your staff. It can reinvigorate you. It can reinvigorate your viewers or the people you deal with. You know, just keep changing it up and have an open mind. Listen to as many opinions as you can. And just life will be a lot sweeter if you can get more people involved and have as many more relationships and friends as you can have.
Awesome.
Hey, where can people find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter name?
My Twitter is pretty easy, at Jason Colthorpe, C-O-L-T-H-O-R-P, and on Channel 10 at WYLX.com. Go under Special Sections, and you can find my blog there. What Would Walter Cronkite Do is the title of my blog.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, brother.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks
very
for having
much.
Me, guys.
Absolutely.
Take care.
All right, another episode.
Another one.
In the books. Thank you guys for joining us. Go to Facebook, like us, Spartan Dogs Podcast. We post all the shows there. We have pictures. We have links to a lot of things we're doing in the community. Go to iTunes, download all our shows, Spartan Podcast, all one word. We're out.
Go green.
Go white.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Channel 10's Jason Colthorpe talking with Spartan Dogs Andre Hudson, Todd Duckett, and Timbo Gracchus. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.